Wednesday afternoon, time for our bi-monthly conversation with MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez. Your big story this week, mitigating cyber threats. Boy, companies across the country are dealing with this.
Yeah, and it's a timely topic, and we've seen the hacks. We're seeing, obviously, with the political situation in D.C. about what happened there, but we're all seeing stories almost virtually every day, at least every week, about major hack breaches, events in Europe and the U.S. And this is a real threat, folks. For every business owner, for every small business owner, mid-sized, large business owner, one of the things you constantly do is, what is a threat to your business? What can threaten your business? What can disrupt your business? Having a data breach or a hack is a significant threat to your business. You know, in the story, we cite the example of a medical supply company here in Grand Rapids that got attacked back in the spring, had ransomware, and this is where the hackers get into your system. They encrypt your data, and they basically hold your data hostage and demand payment. It's ransomware. And it's a disruption for folks. It can shut you down. It can cost you a fair amount of money. And there's a lot you must do if your customer's data, especially private data, was breached. Not to mention the fact that these folks want payment, just like a kidnapping. So it's a real threat. And we talked to a number of folks about what people should do, what businesses should do. And a lot of it's good practicality, which is just be aware of the threat. You can't guard against anything if you don't know it is an actual threat and a potential security problem. So follow the practical advice that your IT folks say about passwords, where you store them, have a backup for your data offsite. Obviously use the antivirus software. Always install those updates on your software and the patches and have different authentication processes. But the number one thing folks really tell me is constant training and education for employees all the way up to the C-suite and the executives, because these guys who are doing this are really good at it. And it kind of reminds me, earlier in my career, I used to do a lot of police reporting. I had a detective in Kent County tell me that you should never, never underestimate the ability of a well-determined, smart criminal who is determined to rip you off. They're good at what they do, and it's too bad they can't put their talents to something good, but a criminal is going to find a way. And that's basically what these folks are criminals. Understand, when you hear stories about companies that have been attacked through cyber breaches and data hacks, they are indeed the victims of a crime. You can argue later on about, did they take enough steps? Did they have enough security? Well, again, a well-determined, savvy criminal is going to get through a lot of security protocols. But basically, be practical and be aware of the threat and follow the advice of your IT folks. And one of the things folks can do is the Small Business Development Center, based here in Grand Rapids, has been focusing more and more on this for about a year and a half, 2 years. Keith Brophy is the director under there. And go to a website called smallbusinessbigthreat.com. It's got a lot of information on there. They've been doing some seminars and webinars on how to protect yourself and your business. And it also has kind of an assessment you can go through with some pretty in-depth questions that will take about a half hour or more to go through this, but really offer you an assessment on are you protected at the degree you need to be. And don't forget, if you're a small business, just because you're a small business does not mean you're not vulnerable. Quite the opposite. A lot of folks think about these threats as these hackers going after large corporations. Well, they love going after small businesses too, because small businesses may not have the IT staff or the sophistication to be as updated as they need to be. So they get these ransomware emails. Somebody may not recognize it as a phishing email. They click on it. All of a sudden, they got a problem. So small businesses are probably more vulnerable than larger organizations. And again, one of the things folks tell me is constant training for employees on how to recognize these phishing emails and how to recognize things coming in that are there to do you no good.
Big picture, what is the cost to consumers?
That... Boy, I have not seen some data just yet on this, on how much of that cost is passed through to consumers. There's an organization out of Traverse City known as the Ponemon Institute, and it does an annual report with IBM each year. It places the average cost to a business for any data breach at about $7.3 million. That's the highest among 13 nations. The U.S. is the highest among 13 nations. $7.3 million, that's also across businesses of all size, large corporations to small businesses. I've seen some estimates for small businesses, probably $50,000 to $100,000 it costs them to deal with it. You know, again, you have all sorts of reactions you have this to this, including you got to get the legal folks involved on how you have to react and protecting and responding if your client data gets breached. But as far as what you and I as consumers are paying, I haven't seen specific data to that yet.
We'll switch gears here. U of M's affiliation with Metro Health, that goes back about 6 months. You have an update on this partnership.
Yeah, this went into effect January 1 this year. University of Michigan Health System is in town now. It acquired Metro Health there back on January 1. Metro, of course, had been looking for a partner for a number of years in this era of consolidation and growing complexity in healthcare. And they're, bit by bit, beginning to do a few things. Of course, obviously, the most obvious is you're seeing the big block M on all Metro facilities around town. So their branding is underway, and that marketing and awareness aspect to create that brand in Grand Rapids. You've seen Metro Health acquire a medical practice over in Lowell, primary care practice. You've seen Metro begin the process to get state approval to upgrade its special care infant nursery at the hospital in Wyoming. You know, them refinance Metro's bond back just before this went into effect. And what that really did for Metro is it took some of those covenants off their bond they used to finance the new campus a decade ago. Under that, Metro could only spend about $10 million a year on capital projects. That includes new facilities, maintaining facilities, and acquisitions of physician practices. Well, when you break it all down, that's not a lot of money. But those covenants are now gone. So Metro is in the market. It would like to build up its primary care base specifically. And with the primary care base, obviously, you get the referrals to your hospital for the specialized services and acute care services. So it's things are beginning to change at Metro under the U of M ownership. You're beginning to see them roll out some things. And bottom line, as Mike Foss, the CEO, says, this is bringing balance to the marketplace. We'll see how that plays out in Grand Rapids in the market. But right now, Metro's really focusing under the U of M ownership to build out that primary care network and bring more docs aboard.
Talking about the market, real estate market in Grand Rapids and West Michigan is just en fuego at this time. But that oftentimes can leave people out.
Pretty simple, supply and demand. When demand goes up and supply doesn't keep up, cost goes up. And in this case, the supply may go up, but the demand is changing a little bit. And another simple lesson, Patrick, we talked about this before we went on the air, is we all remember that second, third grade science class. For every action, there's a reaction, was the lesson learned. In this case, here's a reaction to what's been going on in the Grand Rapids area. Obviously, Grand Rapids is doing pretty good right now. The economy's thriving. That creates great opportunity, great business opportunity, great opportunity for professionals or folks who live here for jobs. Part of the fallout for that is the question that's arising is, where does this creative class that we've seen rise over the last 10, 15, 20 years in Grand Rapids, where does it fit in? The artists, the photographers, the art studios, the galleries, the creative class and the creative professionals. And this is an issue that's been rising as the real estate values go up. Investors come in and buy properties, they upgrade them, they lease them for higher rents that the creative class can't afford. So where does it fit in? And that's the question we kind of raise in the story that Nick Manis wrote in this week's edition of MIBiz. And that's one of the things folks need to think about. Again, it's a problem from success. The town's been doing well. Grand Rapids is thriving. but here's an issue that's been created perhaps because of the success. So there are some efforts to really take a look at it and try to figure this out a little bit. There was some money that came to the Grand Rapids Area Chamber of Commerce recently, $250,000 over the next 3 years, to take a look at this issue and kind of put together some folks, bring together some minds, and take a look at that and steer those funds and maybe work through some of these issues affecting the creative class.
Did Nick find any answers here, any solutions when we take a look at Grand Rapids and what has been so successful over roughly the past decade or so has been the evolution of art in our community?
Well, one of the simple solutions is for, you know, talk to a local photographer that had been in downtown. His solution was simple. He packed up and moved to the suburbs where the rents are cheaper. In some cases, it is that simple. So, you know, you think about that area around downtown that's creative, this arts, culture, creative neighborhood there along Division and that district around there. If these rents coming up, is that, well, what does it mean for the future? What does it mean for that future of that arts district that's been emerging there for a number of years? Again, the one photographer, his simple solution was to find cheaper real estate, and that was out of downtown.
Mark Sanchez, senior writer, MyBiz, thank you so much.
Thank you, and we'll talk to you again.